This is The Guardian.
Hi Pod fans, Football Weekly is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small town Welsh football club has finally been promoted to League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Hi, Football Weekly fans, it's Max here. Just to say, obviously, we finished recording before Tottenham accepted that €100 million bid for Harry Kane or whatever it was. So in our Spurs prediction, we do discuss whether he stays or goes and the implications. And my prediction now looks even more foolish. But he hasn't gone yet. But then obviously, by the time you listen to this bit, he might have gone, in which case I might have done another voice note before this voice note. Anyway, enjoy the pod. Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. And after the huge success of the Premier League preview A through F, we'll skip G, H, I, J and K and go straight from L to Z, brackets W, you know what I mean. Liverpool, what's their midfield? Something, something, the space in behind Trent Alexander-Arnold. Can Luton's fairy tale last more than a year? Can someone, brackets please, stop Manchester City? Could it be Manchester United? Newcastle should be stronger, but what will Europe do to them? Forest have been quieter, while Sheffield United don't appear to have prepared well, brackets at all. Spurs, how long until my wild Ange enthusiasm is dashed? West Ham appear to be spending their rice money and Wolves have changed their manager already. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, hello.
Hello, Max.
Hello, Mark Langdon from The Racing Post.
Hi, Max.
Hello, Jonathan Wilson.
Morning, how you doing?
Andrew says, will Barry remember to include Southampton this year, only to forget that they were relegated? David says, how surprised are you that previewing the first half of the Premier League alphabetically only took you to F? I was quite staggered. And then, obviously, there's a huge jump to L with, I mean, Gillingham have got a lot of work to do. It's Huddersfield could get back up there. I guess there's probably someone good that I've forgotten. But let's start with Liverpool then. Last season, fifth, they brought in Dominic Szoboszlai from Leipzig and Alexis McAllister. They've lost Fabinho and Jordan Henderson to the Saudi League. Naby Keita's gone. James Milner's gone. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain has gone. James says, Barry correctly called Liverpool missing out on the top four last season, despite disbelief from all those listening. Who's his big call for missing out on Champions League qualification this time? It's probably your greatest hour on Football Weekly, Barry, isn't it?
Yeah, the only thing I'm sad about is that I bottled it in my actual league table prediction. And that was kind of my outlandish prediction. But I did think they would finish outside the top four, and it seemed ridiculous when I had it down on paper. But then a lot of my predictions this season seem ridiculous on paper, but I think I can back most of them up. There's kind of a splurge around the middle where you could just throw them up in the air and let... And I'm very proud of the fact that totally unintentionally, I had the four B teams in 9th, 10th, 11th and 12th, Brighton, Brentford, Bournemouth, Burnley.
Mark, Liverpool, is their midfield the big, that's the big question, right?
Yeah, absolutely is. I mean, Jurgen Klopp said over the summer, didn't he, that everybody was telling him he needed to change the midfield in the summer. He's changed the midfield and everybody says he's changed it too much. So I think that they have obviously lost a lot of experience and know-how and all of those kind of things in the midfield. I'm not sure how much that actually impacts on their best 11. And I think that the two signings, particularly McAllister, I thought he was outstanding for Brighton and also, played very well for Argentina. Szoboszlai feels like somebody you can just plug into a Klopp system and he'll be ready to go. They probably need one more. I do like, a lot of the younger players, and somebody like Curtis Jones had a really strong European Championship for England. And had he been playing for, say, Borussia Dortmund, a lot of Liverpool fans would have been demanding the signing of Curtis Jones. And, they've already got him and maybe don't appreciate what he can offer them. But I still think that they need one or two more players in that midfield because it does look thin. But I'm overall quite positive about the changes that Liverpool have made.
I certainly think you look at that midfield and they've got five good midfielders
And the problem is the eldest of them is 24. And you think, is that too young? I mean, I think in an ideal world, they probably wouldn't have lost Henderson this year. But you know, once that offer comes in, once Henderson's decided he's going to take the money, it's impossible to keep him. So it looks like a midfield that might be at its peak in 2, 3, 4 years' time. That said, Klopp has done very well with their young teams before, with their young players before. My worries, I guess, are twofold. So one is Szoboszlai absolutely looks like a player who should just fit into a Klopp side. But I think we thought that of Naby Keita as well, coming from the Red Bull background. It's maybe not quite as easy as it appears, although I do think Szoboszlai is immensely talented. And then the other issue is it feeds into the sort of background of discontent at Liverpool, that they've had three sporting directors in the last 18 months. They seem to be losing data boffins every week. I don't know what the lifespan of a data boffin is.
Presumably are really like the best data boffins. They're constantly like software upgrades, and you press cancel so many times, eventually they just explode in front of you.
So it may be that they do just stay in jobs for 2 or 3 years, but the fact there has been this exodus over the last couple of years, you do worry slightly, is power being too centralised in the figure of Klopp? And is that the beginning of his journey into late period Wengerdom, where he sort of becomes unchallengeable and therefore his ideas sort of stagnate? And then is that what's leading him to sign all these young players and not temper that with experience? So that would be my concern. But I think that midfield does look a lot more exciting than last season.
Barry, we are contractually obliged to have some conversation about Trent Alexander-Arnold. Would you like to have it?
Oh, not really. I see he did play in midfield in some of their pre-season friendlies. And it's a good option for them to have if required, I suppose. But I can't see him playing in midfield unless, you know, it's called for because of injuries to someone else. I still think he's a fine player. He is obviously a little bit of a defensive liability, but I expect him to cope pretty well. I think my concern for Liverpool, and it's a pretty minor one, in that in losing Henderson, Milner and Firmino, that, you know, there are three senior players, sort of leadership. There's a lot of leadership going. And they strike me as the kind of blokes who are just great to have around the place, great for team morale, good, you know, if young players want to talk to someone or looking for advice. They are no longer there. But I'm sure, you know, the likes of Virgil, Van Dijk's already there, Andy Robertson. So that's a minor thing. I think they will do better than last year. The signings look astute. And Mark made an interesting point about Curtis Jones, actually, saying that if he wasn't already there, Liverpool fans would clamour to sign him. But I don't think Liverpool fans underrate him. I think maybe people outside of the Liverpool bubble underrate him. I think I certainly used to, but not so much anymore.
Where do you have them finishing, Barry?
I have them third.
Mark?
Yeah, I keep flip-flopping between them and Arsenal. I've got them third at the moment as well now.
I'm fourth, Wilson?
I also have them third.
Okay. Luton Town then. They came third in the Championship, one in the playoffs, and they brought in a few players that I don't know a whole lot about. Ryan Giles from Wolves, Tath Chong from Birmingham, Mads Anderson from Barnsley, Marvellous Nakamba's in from Villa, Thomas Kaminski from Blackburn. Tony says, can someone make a case for Luton surviving, please? Lars has the faith. Yesterday, he didn't include them in his bottom three. Is Lars too romantic, Wilson?
I mean, I've seen him on nights out. I'd say no. look, they can survive, absolutely. They were definitely one of the three best sides in the Championship last season. You know, I think the three best sides in the Championship went up, which isn't always the case. I mean, I think a lot's going to be made of the ground, and that obviously is a different challenge for away sides. Their slight problem is they lose some of that advantage by not playing a home game until September. So they've got away games at Brighton and Chelsea to start with. The Burnley home games had to be postponed because Burnley wouldn't switch the fixtures, which is, I think, totally reasonable for Burnley to do that. They don't want their fixture list messed up and unbalanced because Luton are redeveloping their ground. But what it means is, I think often newly promoted teams, particularly teams who haven't been in the top flight for a long time, the first home game, first two or three home games, they get this extra boost because, you know, it's like a big cup tie. Everybody's massively up for it. I mean, remember the Brentford game against Arsenal the season before last. And, you know, as it turned out, Brentford could back that up. But we've seen that phenomenon before, the first one or two home games of a newly promoted team. It is really hard for the away side. The danger is they slightly lose that by not having the first home game till they've already played twice. And they could play perfectly well at Brighton and Chelsea and lose both games. So does that start them on the wrong foot? So they've got that concern. But Rob Edwards is a very good coach. They're not going to be top half. I think they're going to struggle, but they can survive.
Actually, they've got, you know, a lot's been made, Mark, and I think rightly so, of the style of football they play and those two centre forwards who will make life unpleasant for the cultured centre backs of the Premier League.
Yeah, they will. I think they shouldn't hide away from being physical and direct and making life uncomfortable for teams that have got bigger budgets that might not be used to sort of playing against that type of football, because most teams now in the Premier League play fairly similar. I mean, there are different variants within it, but Brentford, for instance, are not afraid to get the ball in the box, and it causes problems when they do it. And I think in somebody like Giles that Luton have bought, I mean, he is like a crossing machine. Puts a lot, if you look at the stats from the Championship last season, just deliveries into the box. I think that Luton will surprise a few. I don't think they're going to be as bad as some people are suggesting. I still think it'll be a struggle to get to 30 points. But, you know, just with the budget that they've got, it looks to me like they're already got one sort of eye maybe on being a very good Championship team next season with the signings they've got. And, you know, if some of the other teams mismanage themselves, you know, you're already looking at somebody like Wolves, then, that's probably where their best chance comes from. Sheffield United are losing some of their best players as well. So sometimes, you know, it can be about what other teams do as well. And so I think Luton are going about it very sensibly. I can see them being awkward opponents for much of the season.
Interesting point that Wilson makes, Barry, about the ground. Because I think a lot of Luton fans find it patronising. But I love how, brackets, shit it is. You know, and that comes from a fan of a team whose ground is shitter than that. You know, it's great to see that in the Premier League.
Yeah, I've only been to Kenilworth Road once. When they were a non-league side at the time, and I remember being astonished to see that Dimitri Karine was their goalkeeping coach. And let's not beat around the bush, Kenilworth Road is a dump. It is an absolute tip. But it's their tip and they love it. And obviously improvements are having to be made for their foray into the Premier League. But there is no question that visiting teams won't want to play there. It's a horrible place to play. And the crowd are right up on the pitch. And I think that will earn them quite a few points, because there will be teams there that just won't fancy it at all. It sounds like cliche nonsense, but it's true. It's hard to make a case for them staying up. Is it conceivable there will be three teams worse than them? Yeah, absolutely. They have some decent players. Most of their signings look like sort of Championship signings. But it's a really well-run club with a good coach, and I really hope they stay up.
Yeah, me too. But I have them bottom. Wilson?
19th.
Mark?
19th.
Barry?
17th. I'm keeping them up.
Wow, well done. Man City then, they won the treble last year. They brought in Guardiola and Kovacic. Mahrez has gone, Gundogan's gone. Mark, is this the fourth consecutive Premier League title?
Probably. You know, if you have a look at sort of City over the last 6 years, they've averaged 91 points. So if that's the kind of figure that they're going to get to again, I see no reason why they won't sort of reach around about that. You know, who in the chasing pack is capable of going beyond 90? We saw sort of Klopp's best Liverpool team do it. It's probably not his strongest side now. I mean, Arsenal, potentially, if the improvements to come from their younger players, but would need to prove it. I don't think Manchester United have got it in them to get to 90 points. So You're sitting very strong favourites, in my opinion. Their squad, I saw it in the Community Shield, their squad has got about sort of 15 players that are absolute, you know, sort of top talents. And there are a couple of players there that you maybe look and think, well, it's not the deepest squad. And having lost Mahrez and Gundogan there, there are sort of valuable goals to be replaced. Kovacic, a very good player in midfield, but don't see him scoring the goals and sort of the importance of goals that Gundogan would often come up with. But then you look at kind of the way that the team evolved with kind of Stones moving into the midfield position, Garvidal coming in defensively. They looked so physical now that the kind of early Pep teams, you maybe felt like you could get an advantage against them by slinging in set pieces, but the team seems to be much stronger and taller now, as well as sort of maintaining that quality. Interested to see how Phil Foden gets on, because feels like a big season for him potentially, because although he won the treble last season, he didn't have an impact on enough games and didn't really sort of play enough for somebody of his talent. And then you just sort of look at, you know, even if Haaland's out, they can just bring in Alvarez. And I just don't see anybody else having that kind of talent to stop City.
Can you make a case, Wilson?
Not really. The only thing you do wonder, and you know, Mark alluded to it, that occasionally when games got sort of bogged down, clogged up for them last season, they needed somebody to break that game open. And the two players who often did it were Mahrez and Gundogan, and they're not there anymore. So maybe they lack that little bit of extra imagination, that extra bit of unpredictability. And maybe the squad is slightly thinner than they'd like, but it's still by far the best squad in the Premier League. So I fully expect them to win their fourth on the road to the 6 and 7 years.
Are you surprised, Barry, that Pep's still there? I sort of wondered he might win the treble and go out on a high.
Yeah, it crossed my mind, but he's obviously happy to remain a boffin, or a stats boffin, or a data boffin, sorry. At the beginning, middle or end of his life cycle, his or her life cycle would balk at what I'm about to say. But I'm going purely on feels. They've won 3 Premier League titles in a row. They've just won the treble. And I wonder if perhaps the hunger for another title will be as ravenous as it might be. And that if everyone drops a few sort of percentage points in terms of effort, that might be their undoing. Because we know how good they can be, but will they be that good this season? No team has ever won 4 league titles in a row, ever, in the history of English football. The only teams to have won 3 are Huddersfield, Arsenal, Liverpool, City and Manchester United, twice. So it's, yeah, I can see them not winning the league.
Yeah, I suppose I wonder if that stat is the sort of motivation that Pep would use to say, this is, now we are making history, you know, if you win 4 in a row. And I wonder, Mark, actually, is they could drop a bit, and we sort of alluded to this yesterday, but because there are now sort of 8 teams below them that can all take points off each other, you feel, relatively frequently, that actually they won't need as many points this year to win the league.
Yeah, I think it feels like there is a good depth to the Premier League, sort of 9 teams that will, fancy their chances, I think, of kind of beating each other. I mean, what I would say though about City is that if you have a look at last season, it was such a strange year. The Champions League just being played back to back to back to fit in the World Cup, and all of the other kind of Premier League participants in the Champions League struggled for a variety of reasons, but I definitely think that playing the Champions League every week was one of those, behind Liverpool, Chelsea and sort of Tottenham not living up to their pre-season kind of expectations. And City, for the first half of the season, felt like they were in second or third gear, or I don't know if Pep Guardiola was sort of trying too much to change the team or whether he was holding something back. But once they got kind of into a normal pattern of fixtures in the second half of the campaign, they just ran away with it, really. And it was easing down. They gave Arsenal that big start and were easing down at the finish. So, I just think that they're too good. And I'm not sure that it really mattered. The motivation was something I looked into, because when Manchester United won the treble, I thought, oh, I wonder what happened the next year. And they absolutely dotted up. So, I think that probably be the same again.
No, they won it like Steve Cram last year, and this year maybe they'll win it like Liz McColgan. Sorry, Wilson.
Well, I think the point about the hunger, I was really struck during the Community Shield by just how much Guardiola celebrated the City goal. And you sort of think, well, is that because it's Cole Palmer? Is that because it's a young player? Is it because he's made it a change and that's what's worked? And I don't know the answer to this, but I wonder if he'd sort of set himself and the team the goal of winning everything this season, winning the five things they're in. Well, they've already failed the first one, but maybe that is the extra motivation that they could be the first team to do the quadruple.
We'll find out. I have them top, Wilson.
Yep, top.
Mark?
Yeah, first.
Barry?
Second.
There we go. Right, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll begin with Manchester United.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. We're going on tour, Barry, aren't we, in November?
Yes, we are.
Are you looking forward to it?
I am, yeah. Yeah. Always nice to get out and meet the people, Max.
Meet the people. And we're meeting the people in London at the Troxy in the trendy East End on the 13th of November. On the 14th, we're in Bristol, 15th in Manchester, 20th and 21st in Dublin, and the 22nd in Brighton. Please go to theguardian.com/FWTour23. And I must remember to ask Wilson and Langdon about something to film, which is slightly odd, which we might need for the live show, but hopefully you'll be up for it. Manchester United, third last year. They brought in Rasmus Højlund from Atalanta, Mason Mount, Andre Onana, Johnny Evans is popped up as well, which is nice. Alanga's gone, Alex Telles, David De Gea and Phil Jones. Maguire looks like he's on his way out. McTominay might go as well. Are they better than they were, Barry?
I don't know. I found this Manchester United and Newcastle, who were due next, among the most difficult of the teams to figure out how they're going to do. They both, we'll go with Manchester United, obviously, first. I think the signings they've made are very astute. I do think they're possibly going to be a little light up front. Much will depend on Marcus Rashford and how he goes this season, and we know how up and down his form can be. He had a great season last season, while still, if I remember correctly, having a bit of a barren spell in the middle of it. I don't think they'll finish in the top four or come close to challenging for the title. Andre Onana is a massive upgrade on David De Gea, I think, who was a great servant for the club. But now Erik ten Hag has the kind of goalkeeper that you want in an Erik ten Hag team. And he will be, I would imagine, prone to the odd comical Rick, but I'd say he will prove an excellent signing. Rasmus Højlund is completely unproven. And Manchester United's recent history of, you know, expensive signings, quite a few of them haven't worked out particularly well, and he may well be very good, but I'm not expecting huge amounts from him in his first season in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, they came third last season with all kinds of problems. It was even a moment in January when you sort of thought, are they actually in the title race? I think they were a point or two behind City, and then they conceded that late equaliser with Palace, conceded the late winner to Arsenal the following game. And those 3 points, suddenly there was a gap, and that little glimmer of a thought they might be involved disappeared. So they were that good with a keeper who was totally ill-suited to their system. Onana, you know, is a keeper who's really, really good at playing out from a back. You know, he walked out of the Cameroon squad at the World Cup because he was being told to kick it long and had a huge row with Rigobert Song. He's played for Ten Hag before. So that should make everything better. I think Mason Mount is a big upgrade in midfield. He gives him more energy there. His tactical brain is praised by every coach. And that's what you need in a Ten Hag side. I think they're still short of a right back. I still think they're short of a... Unless Højlund suddenly blossoms, I think they're still short of a really top-class experienced centre-forward. But I think they will be better than last season. So I think Ten Hag's been really impressive in moving from a very, very unpromising position, slowly winnowing out the chaff, getting rid of Ronaldo last season.
Was there a problem with Ronaldo?
Yeah, I don't know if I ever mentioned this, but I did have concerns.
Oh, God.
He maybe didn't press as much as he could have done.
This is my fault.
people like Harry Maguire, Scott McTominay, they're obviously not a problem in to the same magnitude, but they're expensive players or players who've been there for a long time who maybe aren't quite at the required level. And I think Ten Hag's, the reshaping of the squad, I'd say, is proceeding at the... at the quickest pace that you could conceivably do it.
Now I've listened to Wilson, Mark. I feel like I've put them a bit too low down the table. What do you think is going to happen?
I thought they were quite lucky to finish third last season. If you look at their goal difference, and I had to check this because I wrote it down yesterday and then thought I must have made a mistake, but it was plus 15. And City were plus 61, Arsenal plus 45, Newcastle 35, Liverpool 28. Like, they won a lot of games narrowly, and quite easily those could go the other way against you. They only scored 58 goals, and have they done enough in the short term? I mean, Højlund looks like somebody that they're going to work with and see him as the future of the club. Is he kind of ready now to take United up to the kind of goal figures that you would usually associate with a team finishing if challenging for the title or even finishing in third spot? And I don't think that he is. I'm really excited by Garnacho. Every time I watch him, he just brings life to the United team. They had injuries last season at the back with Varane and Martinez that maybe hampered them at times. But they feel like they've signed reasonably well, but I don't see them getting any better.
Fifth for me, Barry.
Sixth.
Mark.
Fourth.
Wilson.
Second.
Newcastle United then came fourth last year. They brought in Sandro Tonali, Harvey Barnes, Tino Livramento. Alisson Maximum's gone. Chris Wood has as well. They're into the Champions League for the first time since 2002-03. Mark, I feel like those signings are all good, and based on virtually nothing, I think they won't be as good this year.
Yes. Yeah, I can see that, actually. I don't think it's based on nothing. In my opinion, it's the Champions League and how they're able to cope with playing those extra matches, because Premier League teams have tended to do reasonably well in European competition in recent years. So it's at least six matches. They'd be hoping for 8, 10, maybe even more. And I alluded to it earlier on about just how difficult I think that the teams found it in the Champions League last season to play every week. It's not quite as packed the schedule, but I think it is a completely different dynamic when you haven't got that time on the training ground. And the improvement that Eddie Howe has found in the team outside of the money that has been spent, I still think is a superb job from him. But then if you look at kind of the statistics in terms of how many of the same players played last season for them, at least 10 players started 67% of their matches. So it very rarely had to change the team. That back four picked itself every week. And it's just whether they're able to cope with the extra workload. And I think that there would be a doubt about that. And I think that they actually have got the potential to do well in the Champions League, so that might counteract against their league form. And when they did lose a bit of focus on the Premier League last season, when they reached the Carabao Cup final, there was around that time some not great league performances, if I remember correctly. So the extra fixtures might do for them.
Baz?
Yeah, Newcastle along with Brighton and Villa are their teams, I think, will have perfectly good seasons, but possibly finish lower than they did, or in the same spot as they did last season. And I have Newcastle finishing a lot lower. As Mark says, Eddie Howe got an unbelievable amount of improvement out of players he inherited from Steve Bruce. I'm not sure how much more improvement he can get from them. The signings look pretty shrewd. yes, Champions League is bound to take a toll, one imagines, but it must be very exciting for Newcastle fans to have the Champions League to look forward to. So I don't think they'll be overly concerned about finishing in the top four as long as they give that a good crack.
And Newcastle fans will be the ones that still listen to us, which I presume isn't as many as a couple of years ago. But, and I don't mean to bring it up just now, but a lot of people said, you know, Newcastle did a lot of time wasting, a lot of game management after Eddie Howe went to Atleti and had a look at them and what they did. Do you think these new rules will have any difference on Newcastle or anyone else of those teams that sort of shithouse perhaps more than the others? Because every team does it.
I mean, if it does make a difference, you would imagine Newcastle will be the ones who suffer from it. Because I think if you look at the stats last season, Leeds had the lowest ball in play stats, Newcastle second least. There's a couple of the new regulations come in, seem pretty pointedly directed at Newcastle. So partly that one, but also the not allowed to have Jason Tindall standing at the edge of a technical area next to Eddie Howe. which I think they've written in slightly more general terms than that, but that's clearly what it means. We'll see. I mean, I don't know. I'd be interested as well to see just how brave referees are in terms of applying that. You know, if Newcastle are 1-0 up at home against Manchester City, say, in front of a packed and noisy St James's, is the ref really going to play 18 minutes of injury time having sent Jason Tindall off? I don't know. I mean, maybe they will, but I wonder about that. But I think the bigger issue is the Champions League, not just the extra workload, but the fact that when you're a fan base and a group of players who aren't used to that magnitude of game, because Newcastle will be a pot four side, so they're going to get a difficult draw. They're going to get a champion of one of the top eight leagues. And then they're going to get a pot two team, which could be Real Madrid, or it could be Inter. So say you've got two games in a fortnight where you're at home to Barcelona, away to Inter, and in the middle of that you've got to go to Burnley or got to go to Luton. I think to pick yourself up for that game becomes quite difficult, and that's natural. So I think. Those extra fixtures will make a difference, and possibly they haven't quite added sufficient numbers to the squad. I mean, Livramento, I think, is an interesting signing. Of Newcastle's best player, I think, last season was Trippier. So why have they brought another right back? I know Trippier can play on the left, and maybe that's the plan, that Dan Byrne drops out and Trippier moves to the left. But that's a signing in an area where I think they weren't obviously short. And whether Barnes and Tonali are enough to give them the extra legs, I doubt. So I think there will be a regression in the league. But yeah, they've got the Champions League, and after two decades or nearly two decades without that, that's very exciting. That's great for them.
I have them eighth, Barry.
Same.
Mark?
I've gone seven, but I think they're going to give the Cups a really good go as well. So maybe there's a Cup there for them.
Wilson?
Fifth.
Nottingham Forest came 16th last year. They haven't bought 48 players this summer, which is disappointing. But they have bought Anthony Elanga. Chris Woods confirmed his move. Matt Turner in goal. Lingard's gone, as has Sam Surridge, who's gone to Nashville, where I walked down a street and saw a dead cat once. Jim says, after signing too many players, have Forest not strengthened enough for this season? Barry?
Not necessarily. I mean, Harry Toffolo as well, left back, is looking at a very long ban. Betting offences, the Ivan Toney style, so one has to presume he'll be missing for several months. And Omar Richards, who's his replacement, they signed him last summer and he hasn't played for them yet because he spent all last season suffering from a variety of injuries. I think a broken shin bone, followed by a hernia, followed by something else.
Sounds like a game of Operation, doesn't it?
Yeah. anyone who goes near him on the pitch when he eventually makes it out will start to buzz. So, yeah, but they have a decent squad. Their away form, obviously, is something that has to be rectified because last season, 20 away games in the league, they won one, drew five and lost 14. That's just simply not good enough. And it's a weird anomaly. Like, why are they so bad at all away?
Sorry, Barrett, that's 20 games. You only play 19 away games. Was one of them a cup game, maybe?
I enjoyed looking at Mark's maths face. Sorry. Just there. That was really good.
Awesome. Well, while on the subject of mistakes, Newcastle can't draw both Inter and Real Madrid. So let's say Bayern and Real Madrid.
Fine, fine. Any other mistakes we've made so far? I don't know. That's just...
Oh, plenty. Okay, they lost a lot of away games, I see.
They did, yeah. That's the level we're looking for, Baz. Don't get above your station. Don't shower us with facts, Barry. Just some just generalised nonsense. That's what we want from you. Know your place.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to say 13 or 14 away games last season they lost in the league. That just isn't acceptable, and it's weird. And if you look at their opening run of fixtures in their first six... Now, I've lost all confidence in myself now. In their first six games, they have to play Arsenal away, Manchester United away, Chelsea away, and Man City away.
Oh.
That's tough.
That is.
So, particularly with an away record as bad as theirs. So they could find themselves in a bit of bother very early in the season.
They're being trolled by the fixture computer. Mark Forrest, thoughts?
Yeah, Steve Cooper nearly lost his job, didn't he, a couple of times last season. And there was even some reports that Lopetegui was one of those that was being lined up really early on to move into the potential City ground vacancy. He's available now, which Steve Cooper might not be too excited about. I really like Gibbs White and Johnson, like sort of most people. They feel like they're the key to... sort of Forest's success. But once they actually got a settled team, I felt like there were three worse teams than them in the Premier League last season. They deserved to stay up. I was just looking at some stats around Awoniyi, and Forest won 42% of the games he started and only 15% of those that he didn't. So felt like a key man up front and sort of scored the goals for them late on in the season that kept them up. I think they'll be about the same as last year, which might just be enough to stay up again.
Wilson?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's noticed, but their away form last season was terrible. They only won 1, drew 5 and lost 13 of the 19 games. Barry's right, that clearly is an issue. I saw them against Arsenal at home, and they were really impressive. The atmosphere there was really good. And I think the two periods of last season when they weren't good was after they'd made a load of signings. So we can't really criticise them now for having been quite restrained in those signings. I think they've got the squad they pretty much want. I think the Langer's move is an interesting one. That suggests to me that United have quite a lot of faith in Ahmed Diallo, which he got 13 goals for Sunderland this season and was clearly Sunderland's best player by quite a distance. Got an amazing left foot. I fear for Diallo slightly physically in the Premier League. He's not a big lad and he's injured at the moment. But Alanga, I think, is a decent player and a good signing for Forest. So I don't really have concerns about their squad. And when they were settled last season, they looked really good. So I think they could be relatively comfortably safe this season.
14th for me, Wilson.
12th.
Mark?
16th.
Barry?
16th.
Sheffield United came second in the Championship last year. They brought in Austin Trusty, Benny Traore and Anis Slimani. Ilinam Dai... one of their best players has gone to Marseille. Sander Berg's on his way to Burnley. Grant says, what on earth are Sheffield United doing? Steven says, can the panel think of another team who've been promoted and will start the season significantly weaker? And Dye and Berg are sold. Doyle and McAtee returning to Man City. Billy Sharp even being let go, leaving us with two academy kids up top to start the season. Mark, it doesn't look promising at this stage.
No. The supporter there has just outlined all of the issues. I mean, presumably they will... spend some of that money. I know there've sort of been some concerns over sort of finances at Bramall Lane, but you would need to replace that type of quality. And they been linked with someone like Hamer from Coventry that would be the kind of signing that they should be looking at Sheffield United. But at the moment, as we look at their team now, it is worse than the one that came up. And whether they are just thinking, well, we'll take the Premier League money, because even if we spend 40, 50 million, we'll probably go down anyway. So we might as well not bother and, we'll be stronger for it in the long run. I mean, that would be not a great way to run the club. But I think Ndiaye particularly is going to be a massive loss. The double figures in terms of goals and assists last season. In terms of take-ons, I think only João Pedro, who moved to Brighton, was better than him in the Championship, and I think he's going to be a big player for them. So, I just think that Sheffield United looking at their squad as it stands at the moment, I'm not sure that they'd do that great in the Championship, never mind the Premier League.
I have them 18th, Barry.
Yeah, the listener who sent in the email basically outlined everything that needs to be said about Sheffield United. I have them rock bottom, 20th.
Wilson?
Yeah, 20th.
Mark?
Yeah, 20th.
All right, that'll do for part two. Part three will begin with Tottenham Hotspur.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Hey, Jonathan, tell us about your brand new column, Wilson on Soccer.
Well, it's a newsletter. I'm not entirely clear how it differs from a column, other than it gets emailed to you rather than you having to actually look for it.
All right.
But yeah, it's about European football. It's aimed at the US audience, but it's free for everybody. I'm a very broad church, and you can sign up to it on the Guardian website, and it's totally free. The first one's out today, and then it should be in your inbox. I don't know what time, but on a Monday. I get confused with time zones. I think it's designed to arrive early morning US time on a Monday, which would be lunchtime-ish UK time. And it'll be tremendous.
I did ask you before the pod if you had to be American, to which the question was, do you have to be American to read it? But you thought I meant, do you have to be American, as in Wilson becomes rootin' tootin' rootin' tootin'?
Well, to be fair, you said, do you have to be American?
And he took it literally. Well, I didn't know American Jonathan Wilson.
Yeah, well, I think it would be more the sort of nerdy Woody Allen type of American than...
Yeah, Phil Dukes of Hazzard was my dream.
You're not that funny, Wilson. Yeah.
And neither is Woody Allen these days.
Let's go back to the football. Spurs then, 8th last season. They bought in Madison. Van der Den from Wolfsburg. Poro Kulusevski have signed full-time. They bought in a new keeper, Vicario, and a centre-forward, Alejo Felis. Harry Winks, Lucas Moura have gone. At the time of podcasting, Harry Kane is still there. Barca Jim, for you, Max, my mate, Gamma Jack 84, who's a Spurs fan, is feeling something he's described as a horrible amount of hope. After the sterling, duplicitous amount of work you did to get Ange there, how are you feeling? I mean, I am wildly optimistic. Based, Mark, on 30 seconds of Spurs playing out from the back at the Camp Nou against a Barcelona team that was sort of trying, which ended up in one of our players being offside, I think. But for that... I have huge hopes.
Yeah, you just paper over the 4 goals that were conceded in that game as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think Postecoglou has, up until this point, done everything right in terms of his communication to the supporters, you know, the kind of Mourinho, Nuno, Conte hat-trick, I think had worn down most supporters and, you know, even the players, because Romero said there'd been a complete breakdown in sort of relationship with Conte that, you know, was pretty obvious for everybody to see. I mean, this time last year, most people had Tottenham finishing in the top four, and I think even probably third. They were considered, strong contenders for the top four. It went spectacularly wrong with Antonio Conte. He had personal issues to deal with. They had the Champions League, but his sort of frustration at being at Tottenham had clearly worn him down long before he had that rant at Southampton. But he was as much to blame, I think. And I can see the Spurs players really enjoy playing under Postecoglou. They need to improve defensively because they conceded 63 goals last season. I think there's a doubt over the goalkeeper, Vicario, just at the level he's coming to. I think Van der Ven looks like a better signing to play alongside Romero, and Madison is really exciting. But I mean, a lot will depend on whether Harry Kane stays, because you can't replace 30 goals very easily.
What do you think happens, Wilson? I mean, is it ridiculous to predict? Like, Harry Kane seems to have said, if it's not done by 2 o'clock on Sunday, then I'm staying.
Yeah, which is an odd approach, given how Daniel Levy tends to handle negotiations. If he wants to leave, maybe he does just want clarity. And I think probably everybody at Tottenham just wants clarity. But the problem is, unless he actually signs a new contract, there will not be clarity until next summer. And I think I sort of flip-flop back and forth on this. I think in some ways, it'd be better for Postecoglou to just be done with it, have Kane go on and sort of prepare for the future. And that maybe would lessen the pressure on him, lessen the expectation that, you know, a new manager coming in, reshaping a squad that sort of fell apart pretty badly last year without Kane, you probably will be forgiven a few poor performances and poor results. Whereas if Kane's there, people may still have hopes of top four, top six. But yeah, that squad is nowhere near as good as the stadium it'll be playing in. And it'll take a while to put that right, whether that's with or without Kane.
Producer Joel wonders if Daniel Levy and Harry Kane have a 24-style countdown clock. Boo, 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 boo. What do you think is going to happen, Barry? I've got Tottenham second.
Whoa. I actually thought you were going to end
top. No. It's very much in a kind of Arsenal came second and no one expected it. I love Postecoglou. I mean, I've obviously been brainwashed by Australians, right? I mean, I really, there's just no doubt about it. I love everything he does. I love how gruff he is. I love when the social media guy at Spurs sort of tries to tell a joke and Postecoglou's like, no, mate, no, this is serious business. And the players want to play under him. I reckon Kane might even be sitting there going, actually, God, this is really fun. I'm having fun. And that's a good thing. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it's impossible to make a sensible prediction without knowing where Harry Kane is there or not. I think they'll concede a lot of goals. I think they'll probably score a lot of goals. I think they'll be very fun to watch. And I think Spurs fans, for a while at least, will just be delighted to have a manager in place who wants to be there and isn't acting like he's doing them a big favour. So I think they will do considerably better than last season, and I'm looking forward to seeing them play.
Where do you have them finishing, Wilson?
Seventh.
Mark?
I've got a big season for Bissouma, sixth.
Right, okay. Barry?
Fifth,
okay. Am I completely stupid? I mean, it's mainly based on emotion, that, Mark, more than anything. You're a more sensible Spurs head than I am.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think there are high hopes for something like, you know, Doggy at left back, and Madison, the player that they were absolutely screaming out for in midfield. So,
and no Europe, right? I mean, I just think that's really big.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, if they do finish in the top four, I don't think it would be an amazing shock, because they've got, at the moment, they've got Son, Kane and Kulusevski up front, which is pretty decent. But, you know, it's asking a lot, I think, when for a new manager to come in and have that immediate impact. I think, you know, maybe this is the first year in trying to turn around that negativity. And that may be why some people think it's sensible to sell Kane and you'd be in a better position in the years to come. My sort of, as a Spurs fan, I just think, you know, just rather one more year of Kane and then think about it again sort of in 12 months' time.
West Ham then came 14th last year. Declan Rice has gone. Scamacca's gone. City want Paqueta. They haven't brought anyone in yet, although Ward-Prowse and Harry Maguire are sort of probably doing some quad stretches in front of Stuart Pearce. Is he still there? Probably not. You know, whoever, some old person that David Moyes has near him. That's harsh on Stuart Pearce, isn't it? I like Stuart Pearce. But anyway.
Tosh McKinley.
Yeah. Obviously, Barry, those signings will make a big difference, but things are not totally rosy at Upton Park. Where am I? At the London Stadium.
Yeah, so they've got this German data boffin, Tim Steiten, in, and it seems that he and David Moyes don't see eye to eye and are at war. And if James Ward-Prowse, Harry Maguire and possibly Scott McTominay are coming in, that would suggest David Moyes is very much winning that war, because I don't think they're the names that would have popped up on Stuyten's laptop once he'd fed in all the numbers and pressed return.
Depends what question you're asking, maybe, Barry.
I don't think David Moyes will be West Ham manager at the end of the season. I don't think they'll have a good season, and if I was a West Ham fan, I like James Ward-Prowse. He will score goals from free kicks, almost certainly. I think much of the opprobrium that has been heaped upon Harry Maguire is very unfair. He got booed during a friendly in Dublin last Sunday, I think. Irish Manchester United fans were very upset because they paid a load of money for tickets to go and watch Man U play, and Man U fielded a third string side, and I suppose it didn't show a great amount of respect for their Irish fans. So they were already in a bad mood, and Harry Maguire bore the brunt of that. But yeah, I think they will struggle this season. And if City want Lucas Paqueta, City will almost certainly get him.
I mean, I really want Maguire to have a great season. I think that would be, you know, I think a lot of people, neutrals are willing him well. They had such a great year, Wilson. I mean, winning a trophy is once in a generation thing for West Ham. They got the Europa League as well, and they don't look like they have a squad that can do both of those things. But are we just sort of, I don't know, it feels really harsh to sort of sack David Moyes again when we tried to sack him last year and he won them a trophy.
I mean, what's notable is that the players he's left, I mean, Rice aside, are foreign. Scamacca was a part of that wave of signing some outside the British milieu who came in, who didn't necessarily do that well, didn't respond that well to Moyes. If they do go back to McTominay, Maguire, it's Ward-Prowse, then that is sort of reconstituting that British core, which was what had made them better the year before. So that makes some kind of sense, and that would make sacking Moyes ludicrous. But the squad's nowhere near big enough at the minute. They do need those players in until they come in. It's very hard to say. And you'd worry that they're doing it so late. I mean, I never understand why clubs start the season without at least sort of three quarters of their acquisitions in place. It seems, you know, a dereliction to leave it so long that they don't then have a pre-season with their manager.
Mark, I'm putting them in 17th position.
I'd be slightly more positive than that. I'm gone 14. I read Jacob Steinberg's piece when Tim Stuyton came in, and it said that the reason he's come in is because the club were frustrated over how long it was taking for transfers to go through 12 months ago. So I'm not sure that that's helped in that regard. But I think eventually they'll sign enough players to stay up.
Love the idea, Barry, of a stats buffing just going pace 81, turning 68, distribution 99, return, bing! Just a big picture of Harry Maguire's face appears. Where do you have them finishing, Barry?
I'm sending them down in 19th place.
Oh, Wilson?
15th, with Harry Maguire assuming signs to score at least 8 goals from corners and free kicks.
Oh, great. The new Craig Dawson. Wolves came 13th last year. Gary O'Neill is their manager as of yesterday. Cunha and Traore have signed permanently. Ruben Neves has gone to take some pot shot volleys from outside the box in Saudi Arabia. Nathan Collins has gone to Brentford. Connor Cody's gone to Leicester. Raul Jimenez has gone to Fulham. And Ryan Giles, we mentioned already. So they've lost quite a lot of experience there. Brendan says, should Wolves have held off sacking Lopetegui until next Tuesday so they could at least get a new manager bounce? Wilson?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a good situation now. I mean, in some respects, I admire what the owner's done in setting out why they've had to release all these players and sell all these players and explaining the potential FFP penalties. On the other hand, how did they not notice that when this was happening? How have they got themselves in this position where they've had to strip the squad apart to comply? And that's a problem not of this summer, but in fact, assuming that statement is true, and I confess I find FFP quite hard to follow until somebody explained it to me, how have they allowed the situation to build up? So Lopetegui, it seems like that discontent has been rumbling on for a while, and they've been in talks for a while about him leaving. I thought he did a really, really good job there last season. And so I think I'd have had them comfortably mid-table had he still been there and had they not lost, seven sort of highest level players with, I mean, Diego Costa, I guess you don't really put in that, but Traore and Mucinho as well. And the only player, the only new player they've actually signed this summer is Matt Doherty, who obviously has been there before. So yeah, I fear for them a bit. Gary O'Neill's interesting as well. He did so well at Bournemouth in similar situation, that he came into a club that everybody expected to go down, whose previous manager had said they weren't good enough to stay up, and he worked miracles. So be a big test of him, although I suspect he probably doesn't want to get typecast as the sort of Red Adair figure.
I'm relegating them in 19th, Barry.
I have them in 15th. It's worth noting, by the way, that they were signed Sasa Kalajic last season and he almost immediately did his knee. So I think they only got 30 minutes out of him. So he's fit again, I presume. And goals for them was a big problem last season. So if he can score a few, that might help.
And he's a big man, isn't he? He is a big guy.
He is a very, very big man, yes.
6'7", I think.
He's 6'7". Oh, more of those centre-forwards in the Premier League, please. Mark, where have you got them?
Yeah, they were a relegation team before Lopetegui went in. They were, they were in the bottom three. I think he was the reason they stayed up. With him gone, I think they'll finish in the bottom three. I've got 18.
Wilson, have I asked yours?
You haven't. 17th, just surviving.
Okay. Well done. So, your top five, Wilson, are
City, United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Newcastle.
Mark.
City, Arsenal, Liverpool, United, Chelsea.
Barry.
Arsenal, City, Liverpool, Chelsea, Spurs.
Right, okay. And your bottom threes, Wilson?
Fulham, Luton, Sheffield United.
Oh, Fulham. Wow. Mark?
I've got Fulham 17th, actually. Yeah. Wolves 18, Luton 19, Sheffield United 20.
And Baz?
Everton 18, West Ham 19, Sheffield United 20.
Sheffield United, Wolves, Luton go down for me. Somehow Fulham are 10th. City, Spurs, Arsenal, Liverpool, Manchester United, my top five. Barry, did your tree get knocked down or is it still there?
It's still there. Now, the problem was the roots were so big that they caused the pavement to bulge.
Yes.
So they've drilled out all the tarmac from the pavement around the roots, somehow flattened them and then re-tarmacked. So it's now perfectly smooth. And I have no idea how the tree is going to survive that, but
there will be a tree surgeon listening. If you could explain,
I'm hoping they knew what they were doing. Although I suspect they didn't.
And if you flatten the roots, do you know what type of tree it is?
That's a very good question. I actually don't, and I've been staring at it for about 16 years now. Just let me go and have a look.
I think there's a Shazam for trees, isn't there? You can point at your phone at it.
I have it on my phone. Hang on, what's it called? Also, the one I've got is free. It's amazing. If a plant is ailing, it'll tell you. It's called Plant Parent.
Plant Parent, Barry. Get on Plant Parent and you can tell us on Monday.
Right. I'm going to say sycamore. But,
okay, right. That's nice. Tell says, has Mark tried buffalo cauliflower? Could be his way in. What news, Mark, of your diet?
I definitely haven't tried buffalo cauliflower, but I'm onto the intermittent fasting, Max, that's sort of becoming all the rage these days. I'm trying to move into that. So only eat for 8 hours a day. It does say...
it sounds quite a lot. I'm not sure that's how you're meant to do it.
That was
gnawing at the gazelle carcass from midday till 8 p.m.
I do go from 12 to 8. That is... That's the buying, Max. That's the way they hook you in. There's then like a little asterisk that says, as part of a balanced diet that I didn't read at the first bit. But yeah, I've been trying. Had my first banana the other week. So
your first ever banana?
Wasn't the most enjoyable experience, but I managed to get through it. So yeah, onwards and upwards.
How did you, what form did you consume it? Just neat?
It was neat. It was done, I feel like I needed gloves, such was the texture. I really did.
Did you peel it?
Yeah, I did first, yeah. Yeah, I didn't go skin first. I peeled it, and it took me about 25 minutes to eat, such was the amount of chewing I was doing to get through it. But it was mind over matter. I got there in the end.
25 minutes to eat a banana? Is that...
Yeah. It was,
is that every...
No, it was on a long walk from my office to the train station. I was just like, each small mouthful, bit by bit.
Well, hang on. How many calories in a banana? Let me look that up.
Fruit tends to be quite high in calories, isn't it?
But, hang on, it's 89 calories. It takes 25 minutes to eat it. So that means that... I think it means you probably could, at that pace, eat banana solidly for the full 8 hours and still be in a significant calorie deficit.
And walking.
That's near enough. Let's call it 200 calories an hour. So that's only 1,600 calories over the 8-hour period. What males need, is it 2,400? Yeah.
I mean, Wilson, it's no way to live, is it, on a treadmill eating bananas until you
1,800?
Die. 1,800? I mean, this really seems, seems a waste of this great opportunity we have of existence.
I feel that's pretty much how I've lived the last 20 years. Sometimes on the open road, not just a treadmill, but
feels like a good place to finish it. There's some exciting news of your Nicky Campbell anecdote from last season, Barry. But we'll save that for the first weekend of the Premier League season, which we are doing on Sunday night, and it'll be out early Monday. But for the time being, thank you, Wilson.
Cheers, thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Max.
Thanks, Barry.
Thank you.
We'll be back Monday morning. Football Weekly is produced by Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Danielle Stevens.
This is The Guardian.